Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, everybody, it's Friday. Got that Friday feeling. It's November the 18th. We're going to kick off your weekend in style on the Cale Clark Show. You can call in right now, 888-914-9149. That's the number to call. Or you can also email the show, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. Hashtag RIP Twitter is trending. I don't know if Twitter is going to be shut down or not, but I'm still there for the moment. At Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, and the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Now, I'm sure it's going to keep going in some form. But once again, the toll-free studio line to call to talk to me, for free, 888-914-9149. And Producer Jim, just to let you know, I can't see any of the calls at the moment, so I'm just going to have to trust you. If you have a good call, just, hey, you make the call, right? You put that person through. 888-914-9149. And well, today's episode is around the dinner hour in some places, and I don't want to make you too hungry, but I've titled this episode Done Like Dinner, because today I'm going to tell you about a guy who thought he was done like dinner, a sailor who spent 60 hours at the bottom of the ocean when his boat sunk and somehow survived. This is an incredible story. Plus, speaking of dinner, there's a certain gadget that was super popular. It was the coveted item on a Black Friday over the last few years. Obviously, lots of Black Friday sales are already happening. Next week, Thanksgiving Thursday. I can't believe Thanksgiving's here already. And then Black Friday. Well, this item was super coveted for many a year during Black Friday sales. And you could really even hardly ever find it on sale. It was super pricey. Everyone had to have one. And now you can pretty much get them for really, really cheap, pennies on the dollar. What am I talking about? It's fallen out of favor, but there's a story behind this. I'm going to share that with you later. But speaking of dinners, Cardinal Thomas Collins of Toronto, the Archbishop of Toronto, he's a great friend of the program. He's been on more than once on this show. He actually had the Cardinal's Dinner, which he does every year, the 43rd annual Cardinal's Dinner. It's a great fundraiser for some really worthy Catholic charities and organizations. And I got a hold of the talk that he gave, the address that he gave at the Cardinal's Dinner, which was just 3 days ago on the 15th of November. And this is really amazing because it's really the recipe, if you'll pardon all these food puns, it's really the recipe for how to thrive as a Catholic in this very secular environment that we're living in. So that is being fed to us all the time, secularism, through the media and just through the culture that we live in. It's the air that we breathe. And if we're not careful, we're not going to get the formation that we need to counteract it. It's a little bit like the ocean waves battering the shore. Eventually the rocks get pretty smooth. And where I'm from on the east coast of Canada, Nova Scotia, there's a famous lighthouse at a place called Peggy's Cove. And every year people fall off the rocks into the ocean with tragic consequences. People have died because of that fact. The rocks are so smooth from the waves just, you know, eroding them over time, that they're incredibly slippery. People go too far, they're daredevils, and they pay the price. And so the culture is kind of like that. It's constantly eroding the rock, you know, that we're supposed to be to our friends, to our neighbors, in our society. And so we've really got to make sure that we build ourselves back up time and time again. So Cardinal Collins talked a lot about that, how to do that. I think he had some really, really wise words. He's a great preacher. He's super pastoral. And you know, he talked about the restrictions that happened with churches with respect to the pandemic over the last couple of years. And notwithstanding that, he said that one of the things that made him reflect on was that, yeah, it was tough. It was tough having to celebrate Mass in an empty cathedral and have it live streamed everywhere. But elsewhere in the world, people had it much, much worse. Violent persecution is rampant now more than ever before. Obviously, we know about the plight of Muslims in China and Christians as well, who are facing arrest and sometimes get disappeared. Anti-Semitism is tragically on the rise once again at home and abroad. And the persecution of Christians is constant elsewhere. Not too long ago, don't forget, the parishioners in Nigeria who were attacked and killed as they attended Mass on Pentecost. And so this happens on a daily basis all around the world. We've kind of become desensitized to it in some ways, or maybe we haven't been paying attention to it because we're so worried about our own problems, our own issues. And next Wednesday is Red Wednesday. It's known as Red Wednesday, and it's a particular day to remember persecuted Christians all around the world. We have to pray for them. We have to fight against this injustice. The Cardinal talked about that. But they said, look, even though in North America we're not necessarily being actively persecuted in the sense that we're not being, you know, pilloried in the public square kind of thing, maybe in some ways we are, but not physically yet. I always think about Cardinal George and what he said. He said that he expected to die in bed. He expected his successor to die in prison. And he expected the successor after that to die as a martyr in the public square. I certainly hope that that won't be the case, that that doesn't prove to be prophetic. But you could see the possibility of that maybe taking place. And so Colonel Collins talked about how in North America and also in Europe, when you're trying to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, you have to live fighting against materialism, materialist ideologies. Think about, and this is something that's really, really rampant in Canada right now, and it's going to become more rampant in the United States as well. Euthanasia. Now, here in Canada, there is no law curtailing abortion, but there's also euthanasia. So beginning of life, end of life, we're not doing very well at protecting the most vulnerable among us. And so the radical spread of euthanasia has become a real problem. Here it's often called MAID, M-A-I-D. It's an acronym. It means medical assistance in dying. MAID in Canada. We don't want to see this. We don't want to see this. And so he talked about in his speech, Cardinal Collins, he called it the, quote, deadly cloud of euthanasia spreading across our own country. Limitation after limitation dropping away, end of quote. In fact, I just read this week that in the province of Quebec, there's a big movement among doctors to try to encourage and really legalize pediatric euthanasia for children. And so this is becoming incredibly extreme. There's another news report on City News in Toronto about euthanasia as an antidote to poverty. There was a man who was interviewed who couldn't afford to pay his rent anymore at the boarding house in which he lived. Forget about home ownership. That was just out of the question for him financially. So he actually applied for medical assistance in dying because I can't afford to live in this city anymore. And so maybe I just shouldn't be here. How tragic is that, to think that one should end one's own life because of something like that? So obviously we want to affirm the dignity of human life from conception to natural death. And Colonel Collins says, on this front, the way that we look at life, we are truly strangers in a strange land, he says. So we can't look at life, we can't look at human worth by productivity. You know, how many widgets can you produce? Your vigor, are you still strong enough to work? Are you still strong enough to, quote unquote, contribute to society? Or our ability to exercise what he calls the illusion of control over our lives? Because we truly, that's one thing the pandemic should have taught us, that we are not in control, that Almighty God is the only one who has ultimate control. We don't. We have an illusion of control. And obviously, discarding the most vulnerable among us, that's another phrase that he used, that's happening all too often. Pope Francis has just railed against the throwaway culture, he calls it. And unfortunately, human lives are being thrown away on the regular. So how do we respond to this? What can we do in response to this? You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Well, he says you got to go deep. He says the heavy hand of secularism is pressing down upon us. So we have to go deeper into our faith. We have to go deeper into the knowledge of our faith. So that this means formation. This is one of the reasons why we have the Faith Explained program on Relevant Radio, to try to, we all need to learn, myself included. And I try to share that journey of learning with you right now. We're looking at old covenant controversies. Today we started talking about God and violence in the Old Testament. And we'll continue that on Monday. We've looked at other topics that are of note that people worry about in the secular world. And How can it be compatible with faith? So we got to grow in our knowledge of faith, how to explain it, how to defend it, but also in our prayer. We got to connect with God himself, with Jesus himself. And so Cardinal Collins, what he's been doing recently is he's been encouraging everybody to read every day a chapter from one of the Gospels. And you can pick whatever Gospel you want. I mean, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Mark's the shortest, but it doesn't really matter as long as you do it. And he always carries around with him a copy of the New Testament, a little pocket New Testament, and it's sort of a red leather bound. And he says, I like my Bible to be red because the Bible should be red. Loves his puns, just like me. But having said that, when we have this materialist worldview that's always kind of impinging on us and we're influenced by it consciously or unconsciously, the temptation is, he says, we're always tempted to create a false Jesus who's going to fit smoothly and seamlessly into that world. And secular humanism is going to be accommodated by this false Jesus. So what's the antidote? Well, we have to read the actual Gospels. We have to read Mark. We have to read Matthew. We have to read Luke. We have to read John. And that's where we're going to meet the real Jesus, who absolutely should rock our world if we encounter the real Jesus. And that's why a lot of people have left the church. That's the ultimate reason. When people leave the church, especially young people, I believe it's because they've never really had an encounter with the true and living Jesus, just a caricature of Jesus, maybe from false teaching or from what society thinks he's really like. Well, we need to encounter Jesus himself. And one of the ways we can do that, of course, is through the gospel and also through prayer, especially through Eucharistic adoration. The U.S. bishops have called, and I think it's probably wrapping up now their annual meetings in Baltimore, and they've really set this agenda of a Eucharistic revival. And part of that is just, you know, not only believing in the reality of the Eucharist, but also putting ourselves in the presence of our Eucharistic Lord as much as possible in terms of adoration. And so he says this, I'm going to quote Cardinal Collins here. He says, we study the wisdom of our faith using the gift of human reason. We do so in a spirit of prayer in which we ask for the gift of faith. Faith itself is reasonable, though the truth which it reveals cannot be grasped by those who limit their search for truth to the use of materialist instruments that by definition are inadequate to discover a truth that goes beyond the merely material. End of quote. So what's he talking about there? It is really kind of this virtuous circle. You know, it's not a downward spiral. This is an upward spiral that brings us to God. So if we study our faith using our reason and try to learn, and we do it through prayer, which we ask for the gift of faith, we kind of get both. We do need, of course, faith and reason to fly. Like John Paul II talked about this, Fides et Ratio, and his famous encyclical. We need faith. We also need reason to fly. And without faith, you can't just look at the bare facts of the matter. We've got to have the eyes of our hearts and our souls open. And one of the things that we talked about on the Faith Explained show is just today, the prophet Elisha, there's this point where this king is sending this army against him in the city that he's living in. They're going to encircle the place and they're going to kill him. And one of Elisha's friends, his servant, says to him, you know, look at this army, man. We're in a bad spot here. Why aren't you worried? And he's like, don't worry, God's got this all taken care of. And he's like, no, really, I'm freaking out right now. And so he prays. He says, Lord, please open his eyes to see what's really going on. And so that's what happens. He's able to see what's going on in the spiritual realm, the unseen world all around them. And so he sees all of a sudden, the servant sees the hills filled with warriors, horsemen, chariots of blazing fire. And it's the heavenly army of God that's basically saying, no, Elisha's fine. I'm going to protect him. I'm going to protect you. I'm here for you. So, and that's what we have to do. We have to see that God is on our side. He's fighting for us. We need faith and reason in order to do that. And Cardinal Collins loves to read. He actually did his master's in literature before studying for the priesthood. And he loves G.K. Chesterton. He quotes him a lot. And he talks about the Father Brown detective stories. I've never read any of these. I should probably get into this a little bit. But Cardinal Collins says the best Father Brown story is called The Blue Cross. I don't know if you'd agree with that, if you're a fan of Chesterton's Father Brown stories. And there's a TV show as well that is based on this. So he says that there's a marvelous scene at the end of The Blue Cross which is the first and best of the Father Brown detective stories. The criminal, Flambeau, he tries to convince Father Brown that he is a fellow priest. And in order to do that, he starts attacking reason. I guess he's kind of thinking in his mind, hey, if I show myself to be a person of faith and just attack the concept of reason, I can kind of convince this guy I'm a priest. But in actuality, it backfires on him because that reveals him to be a fraud. Because as Father Brown says, attacking reason is bad theology. It's not a sign of faith. It's a sign of bad theology. You don't know what you're talking about. So, and this is why it's intriguing to me. And in Catholic seminaries, all the seminarians have to spend quite a bit of time studying philosophy before they ever get to study theology, which makes sense because if something's not philosophically true, if it's not true reasonably, then it can't be theologically true. Now, faith can obviously go beyond reason. There's no question about that, but it can't contradict reason. So a lot of theological arguments, especially outside the Catholic Church, there's some really, really bad theology out there. And I think a lot of it stems from bad philosophy. Let's face it, it kind of feeds into it. So reason and faith don't contradict. In fact, you need it. And he also tells Colonel Collins told it in his address at the Cardinal's dinner this week, the famous account of St. Augustine. We all know this one, whether it's an apocryphal story or not. It teaches a great truth. The idea that St. Augustine was walking on the beach one day, and he's just tossing and turning in his mind the concept of the Trinity. He's trying to wrap his mind around it. He's trying to find a reasonable way to think about the Trinity, the inner reality of God. And then he finds this little boy on the beach with a seashell, and he's running back and forth between the ocean and a little hole that he digs in the sand. He's trying to fill that little hole with the water of the sea. And Augustine says, "You can never empty the ocean into that little hole with your seashell." And the little boy says back to him, "And you will never grasp the mystery of the Trinity with the seashell of reason." So Augustine's like, whoa, okay, out of the mouth of babes here. But as Cardinal Collins says, I'm sure both agreed that Augustine should keep on scooping with that useful, though limited, tool of our reason. So yes, it has a place. Faith can never go against reason, but it does reach its limits, and faith has to go beyond. So this is what we need to do, and we also have to guard against bitterness and sort of a defeatist attitude in the Catholic life as we're looking at the secular world around us. And he really calls us to be prophets. We have to have a prophetic zeal. And he said, look, you know, we can get tired of battling against secularism, societal evils, evils in the church. We've seen too much of that, obviously, as well. Evil in our own hearts. And it's easy to become bitter and kind of say, these battles can't be won. So again, he says the antidote to that, prayerful repentance and adoration. Adoration. When we recognize our own sins, hey, that can have a side benefit. We can be more charitable to other people. It's a dose of humility. Other people are struggling as well. And if we're aware of our own need for God and his forgiveness, then that can help us a lot. If we come daily before God in adoration, we're going to be much more conscious of his loving hand in our lives, his providence. And he says this. He said when he became a priest years ago, he picked as his motto a verse from Psalm number 100. And this is interesting. It says, "Serve the Lord with gladness, come before him singing for joy." So God does not want people walking around who look like they've been baptized in lemon juice. And we see them sometimes in parishes. They just look so, I don't know, like bitter, you know. But when you're bitter, it's not attractive to people. It's not attractive to people. The joy of the gospel is really what does attract. And Francis had obviously a famous document by that title, The Joy of the Gospel. And so we need that. We absolutely need that. That's what's going to, you know, people are unhappy. Let's face it. There's another stat that I saw that said 1 out of 8 Americans now, this is unbelievable to me, 1 out of 8 Americans right now are on some sort of a prescribed antidepressant. Like, have things gotten that bad? Well, they probably have. I'm sure that's a true stat. And so when you meet somebody who actually has joy and hope in their heart, and you can kind of sense that, people are like, well, what is this? You know, whatever you're on, give me 2. You know, well, it's not actually a substance. It's It's the substance of the gospel of Jesus Christ. You know, let me tell you about that. And that's really what it should be all about. And so, some really cool thoughts by Cardinal Collins on this. I'm going to have some more on this after the break, plus the other fun stuff I promised you. Got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but why don't you call in if you want to react to this, if you have any thoughts, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Are aligned with pro-life values, and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. Talking about Cardinal Collins, his address at his annual Cardinal's Dinner, and some of the remarks he made about how to confront the secular age. Started talking about that in segment number one. If you missed that, please download the podcast after the show. It should be up within a few minutes after the end of this program. You can share it with a friend. You can go to relevantradio.com, the app, to check that out. And so how do we do battle against materialism in our society? Well, of course, we're going to see a lot of that next week with Black Friday sales and, of course, the Advent season coming up. Producer Jim and I were just talking about this. Hey, Christmas doesn't actually start until December the 25th. Okay, we gotta live Advent well, okay? And don't forget, Christmas keeps going. And producer Jim and his household, they don't stop till Candlemas. And that's I love that. Love that old school look at things. And so, faith, hope, and love. You know, Cardinal Collins talked about that in his presentation a lot. And these are, of course, the three theological virtues. And he says, really, if we want to witness to our faith, and not just survive in our faith, but to thrive and also to attract other people, we need this witness, faith, hope, and love. And he says, really, that's the right order, too, because we need to see the vision of God. And for that, we need faith. We need the eyes of faith. It lets us see the unseen context of earthly reality. So that example I gave from the Old Testament, the prophet Elisha opens up the eye, he prays that his servant's eyes would be opened up and he'd be able to see the heavenly army around them. That's what we need in our everyday lives, to see, think about the guardian angels of each person that we come into contact with. St. Jose Maria had this habit of whenever he met somebody, he would first greet the person's guardian angel before he ever said hello to that person. And so that's a good thing to think about. Ask your guardian angel to talk to their guardian angel, or they have to make a phone call or something like that, and it could be a tough conversation. It works wonders. It really, really does. And so faith comes first, and then when we see this vision of God and we understand that God is there, it gives us hope. It gives us hope, and that makes us confident. It gives us energy to go forward. So that helps us to persevere. We need hope to keep going, the hope of heaven. And then, of course, we have acts of practical love. The vision of faith makes us strengthen in hope to persevere, and we persevere in these acts of love. So faith, hope, and love, that's the order according to Cardinal Collins. But so that's interior order, how it goes from the inside to the outside. But for the rest of the world, we need to sort of reverse that, love, hope, and faith, because what our witness is going to do as Catholics, first of all, is attract people with loving service. And so people who don't have faith, they're often amazed by the practical, loving service of Catholic Christians. It's always been that way since the beginning of the age of the church. Think about, some people might think it's a cheesy tune, but they'll know we are Christians by our love. And that's really what the early Romans said, they see how they love one another and see how they care, and not just for their own community, but for others in the face of plagues and all kinds of ills that were happening in the society of that time. Certainly had a fair share of that in the modern age as well. So that's going to touch people's hearts. And then they might ask the question, why are you doing this? Why would you want to do this? And Cardinal Collins gave an anecdote about, I'm guessing this was about one of Mother Teresa's Sisters of Charity. I'm not sure, but he talked about a wealthy tourist who saw one of these religious sisters serving somebody who was incredibly sick and diseased, probably with leprosy. And this is what the wealthy tourist said to the nun, I wouldn't do that for $1 million. And she said back to him, neither would I. Neither would I. So what's the motivation? The motivation is loving Jesus in that person. It's a way of serving God practically in love, serving our neighbor, loving them. And so that's what touches hearts. And so we need to start in the secular world with our love, but eventually we're going to get to hope and faith too. And one of the ways we can do this, and Cardinal Collins is a great biblical scholar as well, and he says, you know, a thing that can really hook people in are the books of wisdom in the Bible, the so-called wisdom tradition. So think about the book of Job. You know, recently on the Cale Clark Show, we talked about the book of Job. That people love discussing this. The book of Proverbs, the book of Ecclesiastes, right? It's nothing new under the sun. Life is rough under the sun. The book of Sirach, the Psalms. Even we could say, he even throws in the parables of Jesus. This is really part of the divine wisdom tradition. Obviously, Jesus is the divine teacher. But the parables are great windows, and they help us to ask really, really good questions. And people who don't even have faith, they can get it right away. And they're drawn into this because it deals with the issues of life and the problems that we all have to go through. So it kind of forms, as he says, a bridge to the faithless secular world. Because we don't have the prophet, right? These are the sages of wisdom. So the sages of wisdom don't say, thus says the Lord. That's the work of a prophet. They're not at that point yet. Your secular friends, your non-Catholic friends, not sure if they believe in God. They're kind of agnostic. They might be drawn more into the wisdom tradition, where the wisdom writers say something like, hey, have you ever noticed this in life? You know, these things tend to happen, like the parable of the soils, for example. Like, interesting. It really does kind of get people thinking. So then, what we can do then is get people to the transcendentals. He starts talking about the transcendentals, of course, truth, beauty, and goodness. A lot of people are drawn by beauty. And that's one thing that we have in spades in the Catholic Church. We have such incredible art. We have great cathedrals. And one of the things that Cardinal Collins was doing over the last few years is presiding over the reconstruction of St. Michael's Cathedral, which was literally falling apart. I mean, it's amazing the thing was still standing. And so he said, we have to do this because people are drawn by the beauty. Even non-Catholics, non-Christians can walk into a majestic cathedral and say, wow, like I need to find out what the truth is behind this beauty, this incredible image of Our Lady, let's say. What's really behind that? What's the theological truth behind that? So beauty can lead us to truth. And then truth, once it moves the heart, then we can embrace the goodness, truth, beauty, and goodness that flows out of it. Beauty, truth, goodness. That's the way to kind of reel people in. I like that. So that's why he says it's really important to have beautiful liturgy, because the beauty of the liturgy can help us to pray, can help us to contemplate the God who is truth. The wonder of music. He talks about the wonder of music. St. Augustine said this, the one who sings prays twice. You probably heard that. So if you're a secular humanist, it's an incredible work of beauty in the liturgy can draw people. It really can. It can open that doorway to faith. And so that's really what it's all about. That's really what it's all about, trying to bring people into the city of God. And he kind of closed with quoting his favorite hymn, which is called, O God Beyond All Praising. And here's a little stanza from that hymn. Whether our tomorrows be filled with good or ill, we'll triumph through our sorrows and rise to bless you still, to marvel at your beauty and glory in your ways and make a joyful duty our sacrifice of praise. I like that. That's really beautiful. 888-914-9149. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Hey, this is a great time to call in if you have a question, comment. Great time to call in. Maybe you want to talk about something else. We've got a couple open phone lines. 888-914-9149 is that number to call. Guess we could have a little AMA if you want. You can ask me anything within reason, of course. And we'll try to respond. How are you guys liking the Old Covenant controversies on the Faith Explained show? Hopefully that's been helpful to you. We've been looking through these hot button issues that really can stymie secular seekers. The Old Testament can be a problem for some people. We've talked about God and science, the Bible and science. Are they in conflict with one another? We talked about the topic of evolution. We talked about, without affirming whether or not that's the right way to look at it, a lot of scientists would say, yeah, I do buy into evolutionary theory. Even if they're people of faith, there are a lot of Catholic scientists who believe in evolution, and they say, this is how I think God got things to this point. This is how things work in God's universe, according to what I think the science is saying. Others say no. Others who are not people of faith or people of faith will say, no, I don't necessarily believe in evolutionary theory, or at least certain aspects of it. They might believe in microevolution, but not macroevolution or something like that. Okay, fine. Let the scientific arguments stand or fall on their own merits. But is this in conflict with our faith? I argue no, because they're asking two different questions. Scripture is telling us, especially in the creation accounts, it's telling us why, who created the universe, and that's God. Why are we here? What's our relationship to Him all about? Talks about what Newman called the great aboriginal calamity of original sin, how we got to this point where a Savior needs to come into the world in the person of Jesus Christ. And we do need to understand the Old Testament to get the New Testament right. It really does help a lot, because so much is presupposed in the Old Testament. And that's why we started talking about this issue of God and violence. People have done violence to the Bible because of this. They've said, man, I read these accounts of the conquest of the land and God's command, wipe out the Canaanites, and I just can't believe this is the same God of Jesus Christ. It's two different gods. And there's a heretic in the early church named Marcion, who's kind of the classic example of this. He absolutely torched the Old Testament, just cut it out of his Bible. And then he realized, hang on here, Jesus seems to believe in some of this stuff too. That's a problem. Of course, Jesus does believe in the Old Testament. Nobody would have thought he was the Messiah if he was rejecting the law, the prophets, the books of the Old Covenant. There's no question. He would have been laughed out of town. He did buy into it. And he said, I have not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. So we're talking right now about God and violence, but we've also dealt with some other stuff too. History, did the Exodus, the conquest really happen? We looked at evidence inside and outside the Bible. And then next week, we're going to finish off the series. Wednesday is the last day of this little mini-series. We're going to talk next week about, we're going to finish off the stuff about God and violence. We'll also talk about the Bible and sexuality in the Old Testament. Is morality changeable, or is God's plan for man and woman always the same when it comes to that? So I would say yes. I don't want to spoil it for you, but there's a lot of challenges to that, obviously, in the culture today. All right, let's go to the phones right now. Let's go to Kristen in San Antonio. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. I just wanted to kind of say, with how you were talking, that the gospel and the joy in the gospel, it really reaches out to people. I've been listening to Relevant Radio for a few months now, and I'm not in the Catholic Church as of yet, but I think it really resonates with me personally. I feel like I understand a lot of the messages that y'all are trying to talk about. I've been looking into what the rosary means, and I've started praying with the rosary at the 7 p.m. thing that y'all do. And I was actually raised pagan Wiccan.
Oh my goodness.
Coming from
pagan
a really
Wiccan.
Coming from a really non-traditional religious background, I'm just surprised how just the truth of it really rings with me, and there are things that seem like coincidences, but I feel like they're really pulling me in as well. So it's just really impressive to me. Like, I had a friend pass away from complex regional pain syndrome, it's really rare, and I miss her dearly. But the other day I heard on the rosary someone praying for their friend that has the same condition, and that, along with a few other things that I had heard on there, just wow, being able to hear it feels like too much to be a coincidence, you know?
Oh, yeah. Kristen, I'm so glad you called in. This is so great to hear. Is there another real miracle moment here on Relevant Radio? And what's interesting is that you're calling from San Antonio. This is one of our new stations for Relevant Radio in that part of Texas. So I'm so happy to hear that it's reached you and that you're exploring the faith and listening to Father Rocky pray the rosary on the Family Rosary Across America every night. And yeah, when he shares these answers to prayer that we get from our listeners, it's always so encouraging that this stuff is really real. And when we experience it in our own lives, it really hits different, doesn't it? And I like what you said when you said, Kristen, that these things are not coincidences. I don't think they are at all. They're divine incidences, as it were. And so I'm so glad that you called in and that you're intrigued by it. And I hope you keep listening and keep calling in. Yeah, Kristen, are you still there?
Oh, yes. Sorry, I might have cut off. Yes, I started dating a boy who he's Catholic, but he's not really practicing very often. He was raised Catholic, but he hasn't been to church in a little while. But I saw one of the billboards here in San Antonio had the station on it, and I thought, you know what, let me just flip to this and see how it goes. And I think I'm going to actually ask him to start taking me to the church that he used to go to, St. Helena's here.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's...
see if we can start getting on the right path.
Well, hey, I guess you just verified and validated our billboard strategy. It obviously worked in your case, and I'm so glad that you tuned in. And that's kind of cool. So this gentleman that you're in a relationship with, hey, maybe this could be a kind of a spur for him. You know, it's the San Antonio Spurs are out there, of course, and no pun intended, but a spur for him to maybe reinvestigate the Catholic faith himself too. And that was kind of my background growing up. I was kind of a Catholic in name only. And I really wasn't practicing my faith for many, many years, and had a spiritual awakening in my university years. So that'd be incredible if you could kind of go through this together. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for calling in. I'm definitely going to ask all of our listeners to pray for you and pray for your journey. And I would encourage you to call back anytime. So glad to hear from you. God bless you.
Thank you.
Oh, Kristen, thank you so much. What a great call. Kristen in San Antonio. Everybody, please pray for her. And she's investigating, and she's on the journey. And we're all on the journey trying to get closer to our Lord and trying to get to know him much better. Wow, so exciting. Hey, I'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show. Why don't you call in 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. The Relevant Radio Studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Flexible Premium Life Insurance. For less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/Forrester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the final segment of the show for the week. It's the right time to call in. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. 888-914-9149. Let's go back to the phones right now. Jennifer is calling from Decatur, Illinois. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Doing great. Doing great. Great to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so about a year back, I was traveling and listening to a different Catholic radio station, and there was a rerun segment of a nun who used to have a radio show. And during her segment, she mentioned that there were different levels of heaven. And I never heard of that. I've heard of different levels of purgatory, but not of heaven. And she made a comment that we would not necessarily be with our loved ones in heaven, depending on which level we went to. And I I wanted to get some clarification on that, that I'd never heard of that teaching, and it was a little concerning.
Ooh, that's a new one on me, this concept that depending on what level of heaven you're at, you might not see your loved ones. They're maybe down a few rungs. Well, I don't know quite how to answer that. I've never really done any research into that aspect of it, but I would think that if we're all in heaven, we'll all be able to experience one another at some level. Having said that, I do think that there are different levels of reward in heaven. I think that that's certainly true, just as there are different levels of punishment in hell. I believe that to be the case too. Jesus talked about those who knew their master's will and didn't do it will be beaten with many blows. And then he also said those who didn't know their master's will and didn't do it, they didn't even know that their master had a will, and they'll be beaten with few blows. So that to me is a bit of an insight into that. And just from a human perspective, and obviously God's perspective is higher than ours, and his knowledge is far more perfect than ours, no question about it. But it doesn't even seem like from a human perspective that somebody like Hitler, let's say, we're assuming that Hitler is not in heaven. Maybe he repented at the last minute. I have no idea. But let's say that he didn't. It seems like somebody like that ought to be punished a little bit more severely than somebody who's maybe in the eyes of the world a good person, the guy down the street who seems like a nice guy, but he hates Jesus and he, you know, is actively opposed to the church, his plans, or getting his sins forgiven, doesn't believe he's a sinner. He's looked at it, he's rejected it. But I do think that in terms of rewards in the afterlife, let's talk about that a little bit. I do think there's a great biblical case to be made for that. Think about stuff that Jesus said, for example, in Matthew chapter 19, when he said, "Hey, truly I say to you, you who have followed me, when the Son of Man will sit on his glorious throne, you also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And everybody who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or children or farms for my name's sake will receive many times as much and will inherit eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and the last first." Even when Jesus talks about the first and the last, it does seem like there's a bit of a hierarchy, at least of rewards in the afterlife. And St. Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, he uses a lot of metaphors to talk about the afterlife. He says stars differ from stars in splendor. And that's true, obviously, when we look at the heavens. But it's also true, I think, in terms of the glory that we will reflect more of God's glory in heaven if we've been really faithful to his will and corresponding with his will on earth. And obviously, the greatest star is going to be the Blessed Virgin Mary, the greatest, greater than all the angels, greater than all the saints. And so we'll kind of marvel at how God worked in her life, but we won't lose any of our own joy. But I think the way to go, though, we can obviously talk about this, and it's a great theological topic to think about. But the most important thing is just to make sure that we get there and shoot to be a great saint, shoot to be a canonizable saint. If we're hoping to just scrape in by the skin of our teeth, if that's our target, what happens if you miss? As many people have noted. So, So in terms of, I've never heard that before, to be honest with you, Jennifer, this idea that we won't see loved ones who are on kind of different levels of heaven, if there is such a thing. I think a lot of that sort of talk is comes out of Dante's Divine Comedy, to be honest with you. And I'm no expert on that, but, you know, the seven circles of hell and all that stuff. I think we have to be a little bit careful with some of this stuff, but I think there's a clear case of different levels of reward and punishment in the afterlife, for sure, no matter which side of the equator you're on, so to speak. So I hope that helps to answer your question, Jennifer, and thank you so much for calling in. Really appreciate you. Jennifer in Decatur, Illinois. All right, let's go to Bob in Chicago. Hey, Bob.
Hey, so talking about the seven circles of hell, I want to talk about Detroit. The nicest thing I ever heard about Detroit was when I was coming back from Paris to go to Ann Arbor, and the the flight attendant, I was searching for the word, said, "Mesdames et messieurs, nous arrivons à Detroit." So, but anyway, why would they move the Bills game to Detroit when they're only expecting 6 feet of snow, and Josh Allen is 6'4", and he knows how Stephon Diggs will tunnel under the snow, and, you know, and proverbially the ball will hang up on the top edge of the snow for Stephon to grab that catch.
Well, I love the way you're thinking, Bob, and I think I know who this is. I don't necessarily want to reveal your last name because I don't want people in the great city of Detroit to take umbrage with you and track you down. But note that these are Bob and Chicago's views on Detroit, not mine, and certainly not the views of Relevant Radio. So we love everybody in Detroit. And hey, I like the way you're thinking. I like the idea of if the ball doesn't touch the ground, if it's sitting on a snowbank, it's still a live ball. I like that. But I did not know. Now, for those of you out there who are wondering what Bob's talking about, there's supposed to be a massive snowstorm, especially in Buffalo and other parts of the country. This weekend, they're calling for maybe 4 to 6 feet of snow. Whew, that would be a lot. But have they actually decided to move the Bills game to Detroit? Is that a for sure thing now, or...?
That's a for sure thing that came out yesterday.
Oh, okay, they did do it. Okay, I hadn't heard that the final call had been made on that, but it makes sense because they're playing the Cleveland Browns. You got to make sure the other team can get there too. There's no game if the other team doesn't show up. So, guess they've decided to go to the neutral site, Ford Field in Detroit. It's a dome, so they should be safe from the elements there. And hey, well, you know the Bills need to get back on track somehow. So. They've lost two in a row. I'm not worried about them. I'm not worried about my Bills at all. They'll be fine. The real reason why they've lost two games in a row, by the way, not to get too into the weeds here, because they're missing four starters on their defense, including two real all pros in the defensive backfield, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer. Hyde's out for the year. Poyer's going to come back at some point. That's why they're struggling downfield a little bit with, you know, giving up catches to receivers, and they've got some rookies playing. It'll be fine. They'll be fine. They'll make the playoffs and they'll make a run. So that's my prediction. So, Bob, hey, I appreciate the fact that you're back in the Bills here, and I don't know if you're a Bears fan. I think Chicago Bears have a bright future too. Justin Fields, I think, is the real deal. They've shown some real flashes. Next year could be a big year. We'll see. And anyway, so Bob, thank you so much for the call. That was really funny. And but certainly our prayers are up for everybody who will be affected by this major system that's coming in. It could be a real, real problem for people, no question. All right, let's go to Brother John in Fairlawn, New Jersey.
Hello.
Hey,
yes,
how you doing?
I'm fine. I just couldn't help but call. I used to teach as a religious brother years ago, and I would tell the students there's different degrees of grace and different degrees of goodness, which makes a lot of room for everybody who was ever born, including all the saints, all the angels, and all the other degrees of goodness and grace that are part of God's creation.
Yeah, you know, and I think not only is there are different degrees of goodness for sure, there are also one thing that Jesus said is that there's going to be different degrees of joy in heaven. So the way I like to say is that, you know, heaven starts off amazing and it only gets better. If you're the least in the kingdom of heaven, it's still pretty amazing. It's still out of this world. Now, hell, unfortunately, starts off horrible and only gets worse. But Jesus said this in Luke's gospel, in Luke chapter 15. He says, "I tell you that in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance." So, more joy. More joy. So it is possible to have more joy in heaven and maybe a little bit less. So I think that's one of the possible rewards here. And Jesus spoke specifically, by the way, about rewards in other places, like in the Sermon on the Mount, when he said, "Blessed are you when men cast insults at you and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely on account of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great." Your reward in heaven is great. So there is a reward, for sure. He says, "For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." And then really the intent, why we're doing this, is really important as well. And when he talked about prayer, he said, beware practicing your righteousness before people to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. So if your faith is just for show, if you, you know, when the offering basket comes around, if you take one of those big cardboard checks that they give to lottery winners, you're acting like you've just won the Powerball, and you make sure everybody sees that, you know, that you're dropping that in there. You want your name to be on that stone at the outside of the building, you know, donated by so-and-so. Be careful with that, because he says, hey, what Jesus said, when you give alms, don't sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be honored by people. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. So that's what you're looking for. If you're looking for the applause of your fellow humans, hey, you can get that. You can get that, no problem. So he says, when you give alms, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your alms may be in secret. And by the way, where does this all come from? What do you mean, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing? How is that even possible? Well, Jesus, of course, thinking of the theater, and there was a great theater in the city of Sepphoris, which was not very far at all from where he grew up in Nazareth, and that's where his grandparents were from. That's where the Virgin Mary was from. So Jesus went there a lot. There's a great theater, and so the hypocrites are simply play actors, and they would coordinate the movements of their hands to thrill the audience as they spoke. And we all know people who talk with their hands, right? He said, don't be like that. Don't put on a show. Got to do this for an audience of one, God alone. And that's where the reward really lies. So as always, our intent, our heart is at the core of what we do. Hey, thanks for joining me on the Cale Clark Show today. Stay tuned to Relevant Radio. I had a great call from San Antonio about the family rosary. That's coming up later. Timory's up next. Take it away, Michaela. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.